listening to the only daily talk show in North America covering the world of football. This is World Football Daily.
Yes, 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 yes! It hits the back of the net! Oh my goodness me!
The world's game.
Oh, you're beautiful! What a head, son! What a head!
Our religion.
Brilliant goal! What an equalizer!
Our passion.
Go, go, USA! Oh, it's incredible! You could not write a script like this!
World Football Daily serves up the best football talk 5 days a week.
Oh! You will never, ever see a game quite like this! Unbelievable!
Destiny is in their hands. The fate of World Cup survival for 8 teams from Europe will be in part decided tonight. It's big World Cup qualification action, and it's coming our way this weekend. There's also international friendlies going on. Will the USA demolish Scotland again? Will England be able to get past the awesome firepower of South American side Chile? All that and more to be discussed here on World Football Daily on the Friday edition of the show. Welcome to the show. I'm Oliver the Juice Wilson, bringing you the news and, of course, the views from around the world of football. I'm sure you knew that already if you're a long-time subscriber, and a big welcome to the new subscribers that we've picked up recently in the last few months or so. There's generally not too many mess-ups like that, that's for sure, but a big thanks to those who have joined us. A big thanks as well, as always, to Rafa. He'll be joining me, as always, later on the show, and I'm delighted to say that we're being joined by one of our favourite guests and one of our good friends here on World Football Daily, of course, Mr. Andy Brassel, later on, to take us through the big ties coming up this evening. Portugal against Sweden, Zlatan or Ibrahimovic, which one of football's biggest egos and icons do you want to see at the World Cup? Let us know. Show at worldfootballdaily.com, at WFootballDaily on Twitter. 310-909-8483 is the rant line, the Facebook page as well. We'll also be chatting some World Cup kits. Adidas have sent us up close pictures of some of the top shirts that they'll be producing for this summer's World Cup, or next summer's World Cup, should I say. Argentina, Russia, Germany, to name but three of the sides who we're going to be having a little closer look at later on in the show, at their new kits. Do you like them? Do you loathe them? We'll be tweeting them out as well throughout the day. Had a slight problem with the Twitter recently, so trying to get that sorted out. But we will give you the chance to have an up-close and personal look at these shirts via our Twitter site, at WFootballDaily, of course. Galatasaray launching a bid for John Terry. Roberto Mancini is demanding that the Turkish side make a deal to bring in the Chelsea captain to them. JT and Drogba could be reunited. Do Galatasaray really want an ageing Terry, though? And does Terry really want to work with Roberto Mancini? He'll, of course, know exactly what's been going on in that Manchester City dressing room whilst Mancini was there. Didn't have a great reputation leaving that the club, that's for sure. The fans loved him after he got brought them that first Premier League title. But, of course, the players not too sad to see the back of Roberto Mancini. We've also got the big announcement. Announcement, I guess it's the big presentation. Sorry, Steven Gerrard's 100th cap. And I find these golden caps that get given out to some of these players a little bit, I don't want to say it's taking the mick out of the fans, but it is a bit frustrating that you see Lampard, Gerrard, Ashley Cole, these players, the golden generation, so to speak, they go up and they pick up their 100th cap, their golden cap, to show that they've had 100 attempts at trying to do something a little bit special for England, like we expected. Well, not expected, we hoped that they'd be able to reach that potential in an England shirt. And you know what? They never did. They never did. You know, we never played beautiful, flowing football. We never played attractive, passing football. And we never really blew anybody away in tournaments, that's for sure. You know, maybe Euro 2006, the last time I can remember England playing reasonably well. Aside from that, It's been pretty poor for the Golden Generation, considering the high standards we expect from these top class Premier League players who do it week in, week out for their clubs, but not for their country. And yet you see them walking up and getting this 100th cap, this golden cap, and it just irritates me that these guys are it's like reminding us, as I say, they've had 100 attempts to try and do something a little special for the country and haven't been able to live up to it. And you know what? I'm not going to be too sad to see the back of them. Once the England side maybe gets this young these young fresh legs coming into it, cleverly Wilshere. Obviously, we're still waiting for Jack Wilshere to find that eternal fitness that he still struggles to get. Obviously, Lallana going to be very interested tonight how he does should he play against Chile this evening. Andros Townsend, can he produce the international form and not the form that he's had at Tottenham at the moment? Hasn't been quite the live wire as Tottenham struggling their way through the start of the Premier League season, just struggling in front of goal. And luckily, a solid defence is keeping them up in the mix for the Champions League spots. Of course, Daniel Sturridge, really want to see him carry on the great form that he started with at Liverpool. Rooney, want to see that continuing as he maybe becomes a next leader for this England side. And obviously at the back as well, I want to see these partnerships of Jagielka and Cahill possibly at the back come to fruition. You know, I want to see the likes of Kyle Walker, Micah Richards, Leighton Baines, the new blood to come into this England side and to give it a bit of a fresh look, to kick it up the behind a bit and to see what we can do with that sort of 11. It'd be very interesting indeed to see what happens, and it'd be a tough test tonight. As Tim Vickery's always telling us on this show, Chile, a very good side going forward. They've had some great players down the line as well. You know, previous years we've seen Marcelo Salas and Zamorano, the Inter striker. Salas, of course, played at Lazio. Was a wonderful player. I really used to enjoy watching Marcelo Salas in Serie A, and was lucky enough to see him playing for Chile as well, France 98, an incredible striker. So they do have a knack of producing some very good attacking football over the years, and no doubt this Chile side will be a little more difficult than I think a number of England fans are actually expecting this evening. We wait and see with bated breath. That's one friendly. The USA take on Scotland as well. A new look and a really refreshed and rejuvenated Scotland side under Gordon Strachan. Let's hope that he can find a result against the US men's national team for his sake, but I'm sure that we're all here at World Football Daily are rooting for Jurgen Klinsmann's men. But Strachan, I think, deserves to start getting some results with this Scottish national team. I have to say, he's done very well to kind of put a bit of the pride back into playing for Scotland, because it was getting into some pretty dour times in the last couple of years or so. There's some other big friendlies, of course, as we discussed yesterday on the show. Italy taking on Germany, the Czech Republic take on Canada, Russia, Serbia, Denmark, Norway, South Africa against Swaziland. I'm not sure how many of us will be tuning in for that one. Turkey, Northern Ireland, Poland, Slovakia, Ireland, Republic of Ireland take on Latvia as well. Korea taking on Switzerland. So plenty of football about this evening. But it is really about the World Cup qualifiers this evening. And I'm delighted to say that we're joined by our guest for today, who's going to take us through the big games from the World Cup qualifiers coming up tonight. Joining me on the show, a very good friend, a man who, whenever we are lost in the world of football here on World Football Daily, he brings us out of the dark and into the light with his expert knowledge on all things European football. But we're going to keep it nice and simple for him today. We won't ask him to take us in too far into the dark depths and the back end of Europe. Instead, Ukraine, France, Portugal, Sweden. That's what we're going to be talking with our very good friend, Mr. Andy Brassel, joining me on the line. Andy, mate, it's a pleasure to have you back on the show. How are you doing, my man?
Likewise, I'm very good, thank you.
Fantastic stuff. Glad to see that you're in high spirits. So, and what is there not to be in high spirits about? Because Portugal, Sweden, Ukraine, France, two incredibly tasty ties. First, let's start with the French. They have this habit of kind of capitulating at World Cups in general and major tournaments. Are we going to see this possibly happening in the qualifier against Ukraine? Because they're not going to be a pushover, that's for sure, the Ukraine.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. But I think, from France's perspective, they're just pleased they didn't get Portugal. Just the same as Portugal, pleased they didn't get France. But I think ever since the draw was made, I think France have had this feeling of, yeah, we're on some sort of upward trajectory. Ukraine aren't going to be easy, but you know it could have been a lot worse. And there is a recognition that Ukraine are hard to beat, but you know they're not that adventurous. Player for player, you have to say that France have the better of it. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And ever since they won at Belarus back in September, which may not sound much, but they were 1-0 down at half-time, and Patrice Evra dished out a few home truths as an unplaying substitute at the time, and it made a difference. It really turned things around. They've scored a lot of goals since then. The way they've got their full-backs forward, I think, has been a real contributory factor to them scoring so many goals. And, you know, for the first time in ages, there looks as if there's a good vibe around the national team. And, you know, it's always, as you say, with France, there's the feeling that they're on the brink of some imminent fallout within the dressing room or with the public. But at the moment, it all seems good.
They do love a revolution, don't they, the French? You have to say that. But in all seriousness, that Everest speech against Belarus at halftime, is that something that's almost been needed and been a long time coming for France? Because there has been, leading into tournaments, last year we saw Evra pretending to wipe his behind with the French shirt in a game just before the Euros. We obviously had Nasri threatening a reporter at the Euros. There are these players that, with Evra included, that have that very much that self-belief, but also that ego that almost goes above the national team. Is this kick up the behind from Evra actually something that really needed to come into this French side to calm everybody down to settle it?
Well, I don't know if it's settled that, but I do think that Evra's point was really important in galvanising the feeling within the dressing room. It's not completely healed the divisions between the squad and the media. It's not completely healed the divisions between the squad and the public. But it's got them to a point that the players, where they're all pulling in the same direction, which is very, very important. And I think you'll always have this slight disconnect between the French media stroke public and the players, just because France has a really uneasy relationship with wealth, and it has a really uneasy relationship therefore with modern professional football, and you know there's always this kind of feeling that, you know, modern football is a very ostentatious, which is frowned upon in France. You know, you can't get away from that. And players like Evra, like Benzema, can react very bullishly to that. Of course, you had Evra railing against a couple of journalists recently. Just this week, you had Karim Benzema saying, look, if people want to criticise me over the game, that's fine. But the thing that does my head in is when people talk about the headphones, for example. You know, there was this thing with the French national team and a lot of the top clubs banning players from wearing headphones because they thought it was contrary to team spirit. Whereas, I don't know, if it's all swimmers during the Olympics, they were just in their bubble and that's fine. But, you know, it was just another example of how distant they were from the public and, you know, how they didn't want to connect with people and stuff. It's all about appearance when you're playing for the French national team. So that's something that obviously comes to the surface more when the results aren't good. They have been recently. And, you know, there's a feeling that, you do have a group with some sort of potential because, you know, Evra is still considered an important part of it. He's very much liked within the dressing room, even though there are people who thought he should never be picked for France again. And I think Franck Ribéry is an important part of that as well because he was another one who a lot of the French public would have quite happily thrown out after the 2010 World Cup. But, you know, he's someone who's knuckled down to an incredible degree and now is possibly on the brink of winning the Ballon d'Or. So he really has turned perception around.
Just quickly on Ribéry and that Ballon d'Or, Andy, do you think he is the outstanding candidate for it? Everybody talks about Messi and Ronaldo, but when you think about the year that Ribéry had, and it's been pretty phenomenal, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. And, you know, I think it goes to show that while there's, you know, plenty of room for statistical analysis in football, that doesn't tell the whole picture. You know, you can talk about the goals that Ribéry scored and the ones that he set up, also the work that he's put in. It's absolutely phenomenal. And I think he really set the tempo for Bayern. I think whoever gets the Ballon d'Or, because it's an individual prize, of course, but it's very much in the context of a team sport, it has to be a Bayern player for me. I think that they were extraordinary last season. And, you know, they really defined European football and world club football, I think. So, I would love to see it be him. He's so industrious and he really led the team forward, and he's been huge for them ever since he came back from the 2010 World Cup at a bit of a crossroads in his career. So I hope it's him.
I think we all here at World Football Daily are thinking that we hope it, just for a change of pace for once, for it to be to be Frank Ribery, as the top three contenders start to almost push themselves away from the rest of the pack for the Ballon d'Or votes. This France side, obviously you look at the midfield that involves Ribery, Nasri, you've got Kabay, and of course Paul Pogba, who's having an incredible time at the moment with Juventus. But the back line and the front line, it's an old defence, aside from especially this squad that's been picked, aside from Sacco and Varane. And the front line isn't boasting about its goal-scoring ability at the moment either. Andy, do you think those are going to be a bit of a worry for the French going in against Ukraine?
Well, I think they're going to take measures to combat that, and there's strong speculation that Loic Remy will play on the right-hand side, which I think is a very good idea. You know, he can offer something a bit different. He's more of a direct sort of right side, and they've tried to shoehorn all sorts of people into it. Moussa Sissoko of Newcastle, for example. But, you know, if you're looking for someone to really penetrate and make the difference, and, you know, there is the feeling, you hear the French players talk, that Ukraine will leave a bit of space in the wide areas. You know, he's someone who can really take advantage of that, and he's been, obviously been in terrific nick as well. So I think that's very, very important. I think you have to look, you know, Eric Abidal is old, but he's a leader. I think that's really important. Koscielny's been in great nick for Newcastle. The interesting thing was hearing Olivier Giroud speak yesterday, and he was saying to the media that, you know, he admits he's a little bit tired at the moment and not quite at his sharpest. He thinks it is something that will come back, and I tend to agree with him. There's been a lot of accent put on the fact that he's played more minutes than anyone else in the French squad this season. But, you know, he's become pivotal. His status has completely changed. And it's not just the fact that he scores goals. It's not just the fact that he wins stuff in the air. It's that he can bring other people into it. And that's always been a part of his game, ever since he first came to Montpellier and in their title-winning season. You know, he scored 21, he created another 9, and he actually indirectly created a lot more by the intelligent runs he makes, which left space for Younes Belhanda to come through the middle and score goals. So in so many different ways, he's very, very important. What I think is interesting is the fact that they look like they're going to go in without Mathieu Valbuena. Talking of tiredness, he's been one of France's outstanding players, if not their outstanding player, over the last year or 18 months. But there's a feeling at the moment that he just doesn't have any more to give.
Let's talk about the Ukraine, Andy, quickly as well, because obviously there's two dogs in every fight. And the Ukraine, we were talking earlier in the week about Herrera with this Mexico side and the chemistry that they have of all playing in Liga MX and the number of Club America players obviously in that Mexico side. Do you think there's a touch of that with the Ukraine? Yes, there are talented players in there, but the fact that the majority of them, aside from Timoshuk, all play in the Ukraine and play that similar style of football, I think. Does that give them maybe a slight upper hand or a bit of extra advantage against a side, especially like France, who's got players playing from all over the world and all over Europe in their squad?
Well, I think it sort of betrays a bit of a lack of cosmopolitanism in a way. And I think that's so, so important in international football. I think if you look at a lot of sides, I suppose, even Spain, for example, that, you know, they used to be a largely home-based squad, and that's not so much the case anymore. And it's something that I feel they've definitely benefited from. It's interesting. I don't think Timoshuk will play in this game. He's not been a regular for Zenit, and it looks like he'll be on the bench as well. So, I mean, there's no doubt they've got good players. For them, the most important thing is to make the most of those wide areas. You know, there'll be space behind the two wingers. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But Yarmolenko and Konoplyanka are two very good players. And of course, they're both inverted wingers as well. Yarmolenko cutting in from the right onto his left and vice versa for Konoplyanka. And I think that's really important against two fullbacks in Mathieu Debuchy and Patrice Evra, as we were talking about before, can give a lot attacking wise. But Debuchy can be a bit impetuous in the challenge, and Evra just completely nods off in defensive situations these days. And, you know, it's been a problem for him for a year or two. You know, he's not at the absolute peak of his powers, and we can't pretend otherwise. So I think the work that Frank Ribery can do to assist Evra on that left-hand side, and we know he's done it so well for Bayern in a defensive sense, and B, Blaise Matuidi, because he's a central midfielder, of course, but he's played left-back for both his last two clubs, I should say, St Etienne and PSG on occasion, and he's got the vision and the athleticism to drop in and cover. So I think that's very important. But that's where Ukraine could really get their joy.
And you mentioned the kind of the Yarmolenko, Konoplyanka kind of wing attack. Obviously, back in the day, Rebrov and Shevchenko, that straight down the middle, that front two were fantastic for Dynamo Kiev and, of course, for country as well. Yarmolenko and Konoplyanka, how did they compare to that tandem, if you will, obviously different positions, but as a pair of young footballers who are only, you'd assume, going to get better and better, how do they rate compared to the impact that Shevchenko and Rebrov had in their day?
Well, seeing as they've not left Ukraine, we can't really tell so far. I mean, that'll be the interesting thing to see if they can, you know, really make it in the top leagues in Europe. I think that's very, very important to find out. And I'm optimistic that they could. There's been Premier League interest in both of them, and Konoplyanka is someone who would cost a lot of money. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But he's someone who really could be set to go to the Premier League in January, which I think would be really interesting. He's technically excellent. He can come inside and score goals. Likewise for Yarmolenko, I think his close control is a little bit better, and he's more of a dribbler. But it's interesting, of course, that there was speculation just before the deadline that Zenit St. Petersburg were going to make a big punt for Yarmolenko. I wouldn't be surprised to see them come back and have a go. But you know, when these two start getting regular Champions League football, of course, Yarmolenko's got a bit of experience in there before with Dynamo Kiev, and he was in that brilliant group, and they were in that brilliant group with Barcelona, Rubin Kazan and Inter in the year that Inter won it in 2009-2010. It would be really good to see those guys playing it regularly.
There is, of course, another big tie in these. There's two. Apparently, there's two pretty decent players for each side as well, and a number of people are going to be disappointed to not see one of them at the World Cup this summer. Andy, Ibrahimovic or Ronaldo? Let's take out Portugal and Sweden. Let's put it down to these two individuals. Which one do you want to see at Brazil 2040?
Well, it's really tough to decide. On one hand, I'd love to see. I think Ronaldo's far more likely to have a World Cup that he defines. I think he is someone who could really carry Portugal to the last stages. Well, he already has carried Portugal to the last stages of a major international competition. But you know, he's the one that could make them a surprise finalist or a surprise winner. I don't think Zlatan could do the same. I really don't. Of course, part of me thinks, well, you know, Zlatan is probably going to be his last crack at World Cup. But, you know, I think he's actually made more impact in major tournaments than Cristiano Ronaldo has. So you can say Cristiano's got that little bit more time on his hands. You know, this is the time. He's 28. He's at the absolute peak of his powers. And this is the point at which he can meld a tournament to his will, whether that be getting Portugal to a quarter or a semi, or you know, even springing a real surprise, as I was saying. But I think the potential for Cristiano Ronaldo to do something in the finals once they get there is more than it is for Zlatan. Much as you know, I would never turn down any opportunity to see Zlatan. I think that's the case.
For Portugal, obviously, at home in this first leg, is it going to be important for Paulo Bento to be aggressive in this first leg against Sweden and really get out and try and secure a two-goal lead going away from home? Because we know how good Sweden can be on home soil.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And when Portugal have played best under Bento is when they have been aggressive. The fact that they've gone with a pretty fluid 4-3-3. You know, they aim to score goals, and I think they scored 29 in his first 10 games in charge, and that really got them from a a difficult position when they didn't look like they were going to qualify from Euro 2012 into that playoff. So I think they have to approach it in the same sort of fearless way. I'm not sure the players who they're picking have really got the form and the fluency to do that. We'll have to see the potentials there. There obviously are some players who are playing very well at the moment. I think you have to look at Pep, who's been great, I think, for Real Madrid in the last year or so. João Moutinho, who's just carried on at Monaco after leaving Porto without missing a beat. And, of course, Cristiano Ronaldo. And Elder Postiga is someone who's squeezed the absolute maximum out of his talent. But I was saying to someone earlier today, I think if you look at Portugal, and they're just going to pick Bento's typical 11. I think there's no doubt about it. You're looking at Patricio João Pereira, Pep, Bruno Alves, Fabio Contrao, Veloso, Moutinho, Morelos, Nani, Postiga and Cristiano. It's good, and it's unlike an international setup to have that sort of loyalty, to have that sort of continuity. But what it does mean is when players are subject to poor form, and I'm looking at Nani, I'm looking at Bruno Alves, I'm looking at Raul Morelos, who I don't think has been great at all since he left Chelsea, and Rui Patricio has made a couple of horrendous high profile blunders recently. Personally, I wouldn't say he's right for dropping, but the point remains, players are sort of protected when they have poor form, and I think that's something that's very, very dangerous, picking on trust like that, and something that could betray them in a situation like this.
It's still a bento box of delights, so to speak. Come on, I had to get the Japanese food joke in there with that. To pick on from the Portugal squad for Sweden, so many people will say that this is a side that you nullify Zlatan, and suddenly you've killed that Swedish side, and you should be able to get past them. Do you agree with that? Do you think there are enough hidden gems elsewhere around this squad that even if Portugal are able to restrict Zlatan and his impact on a game, if they can, they'll still have a great chance of getting past this Portugal side?
Much as I like Alexander Kacaniklic of Fulham and Johan Elmander, I think it's been great all over Europe. I wouldn't go as far as say hidden gems. What I do think they have is a certain sort of efficiency and realism that can make it difficult for Portugal. I don't like Portugal at the back at all. I just have to say it. I think they're prone to conceding daft goals. They're prone to losing physical battles at set pieces. And especially if you look at the sort of players who could deliver set pieces in the Sweden team, and you're looking at Kim Källström, who's got a terrific left foot and can really deliver a ball in. I think you have to look at that and think that's going to be tricky for Portugal. That's something that they need to deal with properly. And of course, it's another feature of Zlatan's game that people have not really looked at this season, because we're so used to him scoring fantasy goals. He scored a lot of headers this season. So that sort of delivery is going to be very, very important for him as well. So it's not just about attacking for Portugal and trying to go to Stockholm with a lead. I think it's about not conceding any daft goals. Even if they were going to Stockholm with a 1-0, I don't think that would be that bad. They need to win, but they need to avoid making daft mistakes as well, which, as we were saying in the case of Rui Patricio, has been a problem recently. Of course, that last second-to-last home game against Israel, where they were winning with just a couple of minutes to go, and he fluffed a kick straight to Eden Bendisak of Toulouse, who went on and scored the equaliser. That is the sort of thing we're talking about, conceding avoidable goals. They did it in Northern Ireland before in Belfast, when Ronaldo had to perform brilliantly for 20-25 minutes to really dig them out of a hole. This is the sort of thing they need to be concentrating on not doing. So I think getting the basics right and letting their flair players do the business going forward.
Do you think Sweden can bully this Portugal front line with the amount of physicality that they have in that defence, and without bringing up the stereotype so much, but the tall big, bulky Swedish gentleman from the Highlands is almost what you think of when somebody starts talking about Swedish players. Jonas Olsson almost epitomises that. Do you think this Swedish defence can nullify Portugal's pace on the attack by just being physically stronger and bruising them about a bit?
I think it'd be interesting to see how Elder Postiga copes, not just with the physical side of it, but with provocation, which is something he didn't cope with at all when they played in Belfast, and he got sent off for a ludicrous attempted, not even connecting headbutt. But I think a lot rests on Nani. Of course, he's going to come up against Martin Olsson. I think that'll be really interesting. Because, you know, when Nani's on form, he's fantastic. But we've seen so little of that in the last couple of years, to the point where a couple of months ago, it looked like Bento had even lost patience with him. And as I said, he's not one for turning. He tends to put players in and really stick with them. So, you know, I'm sure Sweden will try to do that. I'm sure there will be a lot of Portuguese glances at the referee with a lot of outstretched arms and all the rest of it, but I don't think that needs to be a major thing for them, and I don't think it necessarily will put them off a stride.
Andy, I've taken up far too much of your time today, indeed. If it's all right, I wouldn't mind just asking one last question about England tonight. Frank Lampard receiving his 100th cap, the golden cap, will be presented to him before the game by Sir Geoff Hurst and his father, Frank Lampard Sr. Is this almost, though, quite cringeworthy, seeing Gerrard, Cole, Lampard get these golden caps as a reminder of this golden generation of England players that never really did anything?
Well, I don't know if they've never really done anything. You know, they've done okay for their country. I think for a lot of players, it's really complicated. And, of course, we've been talking about Cristiano Ronaldo and Zlatan Ibrahimovic, who've not always managed for various reasons to reproduce their club from the international level. I think it shows what a big test international football still is, you know, just coming in and expecting to click when you don't really spend that much time together, when you're pretty much on the hoof, especially with all the demands you have at club level these days. I think it can be very, very difficult. You know, they're players who are decorated and respected at club level, but, you know, they're not at that absolute Xavi, Iniesta sort of level. So I'm not really sure what we expect of them. I just always find it quite an interesting thing, because the receiving of the century cap is something that's sort of spread all over the world. And whereas, like, in England, for example, we accept, like, when you make an appearance for your national team, you get a cap. That's not something they have in most places elsewhere in the world. So you've had situations in the last couple of years where Fernando Couto or Cristiano Ronaldo is presented with a commemorative cap for their 100th appearance at international level. And they're sort of stood there looking like an overgrown schoolboy going, what is this? Why am I receiving this? It's a bit like the episode of the British version of The Office where Tim gets given that hat with the radio on.
Yeah, yeah.
People are, I appreciate the thought, but I don't really know what it is.
it won't, I'm sure, be too cringeworthy to Frank as he receives his golden cap, though, this evening.
With the radio on, I hope.
Oh, yes, with the dangling down in-ear headphones for him to have a listen to Alan Green berating England on the BBC. As he plays, I think that'd be a moment at Wembley that I don't think we'd see again. Andy, it's an absolute pleasure to have a chat with you about all things international football today, mate. We always enjoy catching up with you, and we look forward to catching up with you once again on the show, and hopefully I'll be able to get down to London and have a beer with you at some point, mate.
Yeah, look forward to it.
Fantastic stuff, man. We will have to arrange a date, but for now we will leave it there. Andy, a pleasure to chat with you, mate. Get back to writing the good book, so to speak, on all things football, and we will catch up with you very soon indeed, mate.
Take care and enjoy your weekend.
You too. Andy Brassel there joining us here on World Football Daily, talking about the big games in European World Cup qualification tonight. Portugal against Sweden, Ukraine against France, of course, Greece against Romania, and Iceland against Croatia popping up as well. To France, will they capitulate early? Will they bomb and ruin themselves almost? against the Ukraine tonight. It could be a very tough test for them indeed. And Portugal against Sweden. Zlatan against Ronaldo. Who do you want to go through to Brazil 2014? I still want the Cinderella story of Iceland to continue as well. I know we talked about, you know, Mickey Mouse sides almost being in World Cups and why we don't want the expansion of the World Cup because it means more sides of like Iceland will get into it. But when you've got one or two, when you've got a side like Iceland in there, you know, I think it does make, it gives it a little bit of charm. You don't want loads of the caliber of teams, but you want a, you know, one or two just to give it, yeah, that Cinderella story, that kind of quirkiness of, well, I kind of hope Iceland do something in their first ever World Cup. And I think that's, it'd be a great story for them. They take on Croatia this evening at home in Iceland and Greece, as I say, at home against Romania, the former European champions taking on a Romania side that have never been able to rekindle those glory days of Georgi Hagi in World Cup 94. That is everything that's going on in the European World Cup qualification. Plenty of big games taking place for us today. But once again, a big thanks there to the big bad Brassel joining us here on World Football Daily, giving us his rundown to the playoff games for World Cup 2014 this weekend. It's the last lifeline for sides like Portugal and Sweden. That's the big tie this evening. And a man who's going to talk to me a little bit about his thoughts on that big game and a little bit about football in general. Raf, welcome back, man. How are we doing, brother?
I'm living the dream, Juice. Ready and excited for the U.S.-Scotland match.
Really?
You know, I am. Primarily because, you know, Rangers have been getting some pretty good, they've been getting some highlights, basically, on the U.S. soccer YouTube channel and things like that. You know, there's been a lot of Rangers, obviously, DMB and Alejandro Bedoya, who, you know, are... DMB, it's kind of like going back home a little bit. He was with the squad for a really long time. You know, he won a lot. Although he wasn't personally successful, his contributions to the team were timely and you know, he as a player as part of the team was successful. You know, they had tons of title wins. They had a really deep UEFA run. They made it to final. you know, like he's been a part of a lot at Rangers. And then, you know, I'm not sure if you've seen some of the videos, but Alejandro Bedoya is on some of them. And you know, it's strange. Cause like, you know, it wasn't the best time for him. He was injured basically the entire time. But he recognizes the, I don't want to come off as like a complete, you know, Yahoo just preaching about my Rangers, but I think he respects, you know, the tradition and the heritage of Rangers, the, you know, as a club, where they came from, and its general importance to the European landscape of football. So it's nice to see that kind of respect. DMB was a little bit more lighthearted. But in general, it's also very just nice to see Rangers getting that kind of play, because really, I mean, you know, they're second division Scottish side, which is third tier of the league. It's you know, just nice to see us getting international attention like that.
Yeah, it's nice to see.
Even if it is just because the U.S. team is using our facilities because they're that good.
It's nice that, you know, people still talk about you. You know, you're not lost to the football world forever.
I'm not lost. And to be honest, I mean, we haven't been because, you know, ever since we've been dropped down, suddenly, you know, ESPN Score Center and, you know, Live Score are picking up the Scottish third division, which they've never done ever in the history of their, you know, online lives. So, yeah, I mean, Rangers aren't just going to go away. I've got plenty of time. Whenever we do make it back to the top, and whenever we do get our first real Old Firm win in the league, you know, I'm going to just enjoy that, relish it for days upon days, and just, you know, enjoy it, Juice. I'm sorry. I'm completely fantasizing a little bit this morning.
I was going to say, you're going into a little dream world here about Rangers.
Totally. You know? Excuse me.
one day you might get back there.
One
day it will happen. It will still be a long uphill task, though, to topple Celtic, though, right? I mean, surely It's not just about getting back to the Premier League, but it's about toppling Celtic, and that's going to be a long, long way off.
Right.
Don't you think?
There's the opportunity of playing them in a league cup match. At some, before then. But to be honest, they should wipe the floor with us at this point. And it's depressing saying that, but we don't have the skill and talent that they have on their bankroll. At this point in time, and all we have is a reason why we would want to win at this point. I'm a little leery of meeting Celtic anytime before we get back to top flight, because really I think it'll be quite an unfair battle, really, and Celtic are just that much far above us at this point.
Battle implies that there'd be two sides with a chance, really, doesn't it? I mean, it'd be a very unfair walkover, I think, is the phrase you're looking for there.
We would make a fight of it.
That we were talking to a little bit about yesterday with Herrera, Mexico. That chemistry, and obviously the Rangers would have a real emotional pull on that. To make a stand. Do you think that would be genuinely, like, you with that sense of kind of emotion as well as a chemistry in that Rangers side? Do you think I'm not saying Celtic don't have chemistry in any way, shape or form, that's not the case, but do you think, because the emotions would be so high and so much higher, I think, for Rangers fans if they took on Celtic and for the players if they took on Celtic now, do you think it would actually give them a real fighting chance against the old enemy?
Yeah, no. I mean, I'm not saying we would get thrashed about the park juice. I think it'd probably be something like a 2-0, 3-1 match, and very physical, just because we're doing whatever we possibly can to stay in the match. Yeah. So I don't even want to talk about that juice again, because I don't want to think about that. I hate the idea of losing to them, and that just kind of slaps me out of my fantasy dream world here. Hey, can I go into a little bit of MLS just for a sec? Question.
Do dive into some Major League Soccer.
And here's how I'm going to dive into it. I'm going to use an email. But I think it's a very interesting email, Juice. I find it very interesting because I kind of vibe with it a little bit. I'm very interested to see if you pick up on it. Okay, this says, boys, this is from Jarrett in Seattle. He says that, boys, I'm sure you've seen the articles and all that's and all that, where Sounders GM and owners came out to give their backing to Siggy, saying that he is the man for the job. Mm-hmm. I like Siggy, but I think he's gotten us as far as he can take us at this point, and we need a change, a step up. How I wish that the owners and the GM's backing meant what it does in Europe. Unfortunately, I think that they have to back him. Here's my question or concern. Whatever you want to call it. Are the elites of Sounders FC just backing him because that's the best we get? Think about it. Or that's the best that we can get? Think about it. Jarrett in Seattle.
I think there'd be a number of Major League Soccer managers that would love to dive into Ziggy Smith's shoes there. I don't think Schmidt's
now,
the
see,
best
that's,
you
that's
could
the
get.
Problem. That's the problem, Juice. And I'm sorry to interrupt you. I think you're right. Look, this position is probably a really highly valued position here in MLS, and I think that there's a ton of, you could go practically to any MLS team and ask them whether or not they'd be willing to coach Seattle, and I'm sure they would, and you could probably get some decent coaches from MLS. But I think his point, and maybe I'm just reading into this way too much, is that it's not about who you can get from the U.S. He wants to step up. He wants to raise, take it to the next step, take it to the next level. And, unless you get, you take away, the Galaxy's Bruce Arena, or you take away, at this point, Caleb Porter, you take away Peter Vermees. Unless you can do that, you're not going to get to the next step. And because, those coaches more than likely are probably set where they're at. They're getting paid a pretty penny, and they're probably not going to get a better situation than really what they're getting. could Seattle maybe offer a little bit more or something? Maybe, maybe not. But they got a lot of good things going for them right now, so they're comfortable. What I think he's trying to talk about is, you know, what if they did try to look abroad? What if they have kind of been keeping their options open, looking at other potential managers around the world, and really striking out? You know, like what if they are backing Siggy because they have no other real options to step up the Sounders Football Club?
I mean, that's a possibility, and that's something that Major League Soccer will struggle to bring in the highest coaches, the coaches of the highest caliber, mm-hmm. better coaches than what's available in America. But that's no different to anybody else, so I wouldn't look at it like that. And I, for one, think, you know, if somebody like Bruce Arena went and won a third title in a row with the Galaxy this year, do you not think that he'd maybe say, I want a new challenge? I've done this. I mean... look, I know yeah. we talk about, you know, it's you get players that stay at clubs because it's, you know, title winning trophies and all that. But what about the managers that, because you do get it, you do get managers say, hey, I've done this. Look at somebody like Mourinho, you know, bounces around.
Pep Guardiola.
Once he's got success. Yeah, same with like Pep. Well, you know, I want a new challenge, you know. Bruce Arena could turn around. If Seattle put up a decent offer for him, put enough money on the table, Bruce Arena could turn around and say, look, LA, I have done it. I have three in a row for you guys, man. Three in a row. You know, find somebody else who can do that. Hail at me now, you know? What about I'm going to go and take my talents, sound like LeBron James, oh, take my talents to South Beach.
I'm going to take my talents to the Emerald City, baby.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to take my talents off to Seattle and make a big name for myself up there. You know, I'm going to show you that it's not about this LA Galaxy side. It wasn't about Beckham and Keane. It was about me. Hooray for me, as Dave Hooray. Chappelle would say. And to go up to Seattle and take a great side, a really good side, and give it that kick up the behind that so that it can do it in the playoffs, make sure it gets to an MLS Cup, and be the leader and bring that experience to this Major League Soccer franchise and turn it into maybe a new dynasty, you know, another new three. Seattle have enough talent in that side to be able to create a double kind of winning MLS Cup side, a three-time MLS winning Cup side at the moment. The fact that they're underperforming in the playoffs, I think, doesn't shine well on Mr. Schmidt, Mr. Ziggy. And I think change is needed at Seattle. Don't get me wrong. I said that if he doesn't get it done, you know, I think it is maybe time to kind of say, hey, look, Ziggy, you're not doing it in these big games. And I think somebody, as I say, like Bruce Arena, could easily have done that. What about if RSL? If RSL don't do it this year, Jason Christ turns around and says,
"I said earlier, I would agree with that. I would agree with seeing Jason off if he doesn't win it again this year. And even if he wins it again this year, I wonder, like, just
change it up.
Yeah.
Freshen it up.
What else are you going to bring? What else are you going
to
bring?
And maybe I think there are plenty of managers that would like to take that Seattle job, because especially with Dempsey there, with the fact that it is just so well supported, that area, you know, MLS managers talk about it all the time. Going up to Portland, to Vancouver and to Seattle is crazy hard as an away team. As a manager, you would love to be in that sort of environment, you know, for half of your season, playing your home games there and having that kind of support, a support that pretty much nowhere else can match. And I'm sorry, you know, New York Red Bulls fans, DC United fans, whoever you are, but you cannot compete with the atmosphere that gets created up in Seattle and Portland especially. I don't think there'd be many managers that would actually refuse that job. I think the trouble is that Ziggy Schmidt is so well loved by this franchise because he has, you know, put in some great performances. He's brought them Open Cup trophies. You know, there's silverware in that cabinet, and you can't say
he essentially brought them into the MLS is what he did.
Yeah, and he's not done a bad job there at all. But he's not now doing it when it needs to be done. You know what they say? No, like backing a manager is the worst thing that can happen if you're a football manager. Yeah. You know, it's like you get your back in, you are out.
Yeah, I think they've reached a plateau. And again, maybe I'm reading too much into that email. Jared, thanks again for writing in. And I'm sorry for you, man. I feel for you because, like, you know, they're soft at this point, and maybe they just need a hard man in the manager role or something. I don't know.
Ziggy Schmidt, Soft Seattle, sounds like a ska band, doesn't it?
It does.
Real Big Fish, supported by Ziggy Smith, Soft Seattle.
Yeah. The headliners, Ziggy Smith. Yeah. Mr. Schmidt.
Mr. Schmidt,
so,
yes.
Yeah. Thanks again, Jared, for writing in for that one. I do think maybe I read in a little bit too much to that, but I also think that, yeah, the pool for potential step-ups is probably pretty small for MLS managers at this point, and or the Seattle manager position.
Raph,
where would you like to go next, Jude?
Raph, I've got to ask you. I've got to ask you the question that I asked Andy, that everybody is asking themselves today, before this Portugal-Sweden game.
Exactly which, yeah.
Who are you going with? Who do you want? Who do you want to see in the World Cup, Ronaldo or Zlatan? Because we have to make a choice.
Sure. Can I just say, Juice, that I spent a good, and I probably shouldn't say this just in case anybody from my work hears it, but I spent a good hour, okay, just on each player on YouTube going through various highlight videos. Obviously, much easier to find original, well, not original, but like highlight videos for for Ronnie over Zlatan. Zlatan's got some great ones. He's got some good ones. I think I'm gonna have to go with Ronnie on this one.
Oh, get out of town!
I know. Trust me. I can't believe it. Like, I feel like I'm betraying my own manliness a little bit by not picking the Swedish ninja that is Zlatan Ibrahimovic. But yeah, no. I think I'm gonna go with Ronnie. I can't. Man, he's so quick with those feet, and it's so sexy the way he moves, and he can be a really, I mean, you see it in him. He is a competitor. They're both competitors, but I just, something about Ronaldo, I want to see him. I want to see him succeed on the World Cup stage. I'm not saying he's going to do it this season, but I want to see Ronnie there.
It's a real shame that you're wrong there, Raph. It really is. I mean that in the nicest way, but you are wrong. We want to see Zlatan Ibrahimovic at the World Cup. And here's why. One, as you rightly said, he is a ninja. And as we all know, ninjas are pretty darn cool. Number two, he is a guy that has won trophies everywhere he goes. Call him a mercenary, whatever. But he is a winner, and he changes football clubs. Three, he had the balls to come out and have a rant and a verbal outing abuse with Pep Guardiola, a man who was pretty much untouchable and is untouchable as a manager these days. Yet Zlatan still has the gall to call him out and say, "You ain't nothing, man. You ain't nothing. You're just like, you hide behind Lionel Messi. He's controlling you. He's the puppet master for you." And number four, in general, that pure, brilliant arrogance that you would hate. I can't imagine anything worse, probably, than spending an evening with Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Because I guarantee around the dinner table, generally his conversation is about him, how good he is at football, how much better he is than anybody else at football, about the goals he scored and about the women he's been with. You know, I guarantee, and how much better he is at all of that than the people around that table. And I'm sure it's probably like
See,
that.
I doubt it'd even be that interesting, because I would almost look up to that, because I seriously think Ronnie would spend most of his time face deep in his, you know, iPhone or
no, this is what Zlatan would be doing.
I'd be all for that.
You see, but that's what I mean. This is why you have to love him, because that arrogance, if you're not around it and you're just viewing it from afar, that arrogance is brilliant, it's hilarious, and it just shows what a believer in himself more than anybody else that Zlatan is. And that sort of confidence is what makes players great. And he doesn't do that petulant cry face. That's the only reason why I wouldn't mind Ronaldo going to the World Cup ahead of Zlatan, is that we wouldn't have to see that little crying, screwed up face of Ronaldo at the end of a game, at the end of the second leg, when Portugal have been knocked out and Sweden are going to the World Cup, and Zlatan's celebrating, probably like right in his face, like, yeah! And Ronaldo just kind of crunches his face up and goes, oh! And the same look that he gives Lionel Messi every year when he comes second place in the Ballon d'Or vote as well, you know? Just saying. This Sweden side is actually a really entertaining side to watch. You know, it's the side that came back from 4-0 against Germany. In Germany. You know, fantastic. And And to be honest, if it wasn't for them being in a group with Germany, they'd be through. This is a Portugal side that has stumbled against Russia in a group. Now, Russia are a good side, but you compare stumbling to Russia and stumbling to Germany, I think we know which one's the classier outfit and the better outfit in world football. And I think you have to say, I think you just have to give Sweden props for being able to keep pace for a lot of that World Cup qualification with Germany, and give them their chance. Go get them back to the World Cup once again. You know, Ronaldo's going to have plenty of time. Zlatan doesn't have that much longer to be a big kind of staple, make his landmark on a World Cup stage. Ronaldo's got loads of time left. Give it to Zlatan. Raf, give it to Zlatan. Give it to Zlatan. You know you want to. Really?
I don't know. I go back to the YouTube.
How many goals has Ronaldo got in the Goal of the Year competition? How many goals can you select of Ronaldo's in that Goal of the Year competition run by FIFA? The Puskas Award? None. Is that none? Oh. Yeah, no, it is. It is none. It is none. Zlatan. Oh, right. Zlatan does. Yeah, Zlatan has got one in that though, hasn't he? He does. Yeah, he's got the crazy ninja bicycle kick against England. He does have one, but Ronaldo doesn't. I just something like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
Come on, let us know your thoughts. Show at worldfootballdaily.com, at WFootballDaily on Twitter. 310-998-483 is the rant line, the Facebook page as well. Zlatan or Ronaldo? It's the choice that everybody is having to make right now. And we're split down the middle. It's not very often that we're completely divided on this, is it, Raf?
Yeah, well, I mean, again, I'm completely basing mine off the entertainment value that I found on YouTube. And perhaps there's a bigger marketing machine behind Ronaldo, a bigger fan base, you know, churning out these videos that I was watching. But I'm just, yeah, I have to go with Ronaldo, man.
Fair play. Okay.
It's okay to disagree, you know. It's healthy to disagree every now and then.
Yeah,
that's all I'm saying.
It's good. It's good, but you're wrong. Let's last night, the game that I thought would be super entertaining and actually was reasonably one-sided, actually. Belgium against Colombia. Falcao on the score sheet. Mourinho in the stands watching. And press talking today about a £60 million move being lined up by Chelsea to bring Falcao to London this Christmas. Now, you talk about Zlatan being a mercenary. If Falcao goes to Chelsea or leaves Monaco to go anywhere in Christmas, I think you have to, you really have to question this guy's morals as a footballer, surely. I mean, there is no...
Hey, I mean, to
fork out horrendous amounts
know.
Of money for this guy.
Juice. Somebody's paying you a shit ton of money to go be the new face of Monaco, and that's great, right? You know, you're getting cash, Wonga. You're enjoying your time. You're essentially, you know, playing for the Atletico Madrid or the new Atletico Madrid of Ligue 1. Now, somebody else comes calling and is looking to pay you more money. And just at a different league, it's hard to say. I mean, look, I understand the idea of loyalty, but what loyalty does he have to a principality in France? I don't know. I'm not saying it's good or bad. I can understand money is money, man. He's probably getting paid just an exorbitant amount of cash, Wonga. I mean, look, he's setting up. I mean, he could be setting up his future, his children's future, and his children's children's future with the amount of money that he's about to be paid, if that is the case. And I mean, it's hard. I don't know. That's just hard.
No, just hard. I'm sorry, but you get brought in to do a job, right? And Monaco shell out all of this money
to bring you, and you turn your back. With the money that you're going to be gaining from my move, you could probably bring in two players of similar caliber and still continue to fight for that same job that you're speaking of.
Possibly. Really, the fools will be Monaco to accept it. To be honest, if Chelsea came in with the £60 million bid, I think just wouldn't be smart on their part. Look, I like Falcao. I think he's a wonderful striker. He's a great forward. At the moment, he's the best finisher still in the world right about now. possibly barring Zlatan Ibrahimovic, of course, who is fantastic. But definitely deserves to be at the World Cup ahead of Cristiano Ronaldo. But I digress. Falcao is an immense talent, but he's turning this Monaco side into genuine title contenders in the first season already. Without him, this Monaco side would not be the same. It would kind of crumble, I think. Not crumble, but I think they would be hard-pressed to bring in another couple of players of a similar calibre, especially in January. Especially when, by the way, prediction for January, the Premier League transfer window is going to go bananas. This signals how ridiculous the Premier League transfer window is going to get, because you're going to have City, Chelsea, United, all spending big money. Liverpool will try and get on the act as well, and Arsenal possibly. Don't think that Arsenal might not splash the boat out again in January. I do think that there might be another big signing coming to the Gunners, because all five of them at this point in time are going to be in and around those Champions League spots, mm-hmm. and Premier League title spots as well.
Right.
And possibly Tottenham could throw a bit of cash about as well again. And they're all going to be looking for that player that can give them the edge.
AUB just wants to throw a bit of cash.
I don't know about that. Daniel Levy's so good financially.
I'm not saying Levy doesn't like to be, you know, conscious on his
wallet. I don't think AVB can afford to. I don't think AVB can afford to splash the cash with Tottenham, though. He needs to get a chemistry out of this side and a playing style. That's something they definitely lacked on the weekend when I saw them against Newcastle. But yeah, I think that those five are going to be throwing some serious money about, because they're all going to be looking for the player that can separate them from the rest of the pack. You know, Arsenal, we've seen it with Ozil, that he's helped get them to that pack, along with a great start by the rest of the team as well. But they still need that extra kick to maybe start putting a little bit of distance between them and the remainder of them. Liverpool will be praying that they can splash some cash in order to keep themselves up and around fighting for the Champions League spots, and even the outside shot of a title. And United will definitely want something off the embarrassment that was this transfer window. And City too. City will probably splash, I reckon, quite big on a defender of some sort somewhere, because they need to anchor that back line, that's for sure. They're too leaky. And possibly even try and bring in a goalkeeper as well. Looks like Victor Valdes won't be going, as he's pushing towards Monaco, according to reports from around the web this morning. But just expect a massive spending spree, Raf. It's going to get ridiculous. And I'm sure if Falcao is available, Real Madrid, we know, already interested in him. Chelsea are interested in him. Expect possibly some other teams as well. United with Van Persie and Falcao up front. Just saying. It's unlikely, but imagine that. Would be unstoppable, that lineup. And Chelsea are going to have room as well, because they're looking to offload Demba Ba. What it would mean would be a nightmare situation for Romelu Lukaku, because he's never going to be able to... You know, he can compete with Torres, with Ba, with an old Eto'o for a starting spot in that Chelsea side. But Falcao, if they splash 60 million, Lukaku might as well kiss his Chelsea career goodbye and go look elsewhere for some work, because he ain't going to be getting it in South London. That's for sure. Finally, before we finish up the show today, we've been tweeting out during the day a few pictures, or been trying to. We'll hopefully have it all sorted and solved by the time that the podcast is up as well. But we've obviously been sent some more kits by Adidas. If you saw earlier in the week, we had the Colombia shirt, some close up pictures, the new Japan shirt, and of course that new Mexico shirt that they debuted in their game against Panama about a month ago or so. Been sent, obviously, the Spain kit, all red. Raf, are you a big fan of Spain with an all red kit? I think it looks odd. You know, Spain, red, blue shorts. Like, I much prefer the all red of Spain. The traditional look of Spain rather than this all red look.
I get it. But I don't know. To me, it's kind of a cool little switch up. And I'm a fan of the color red in general. Red, blue, generally, you know, two of my favorite colors.
Very patriotic of you, that, actually, there, Rafa.
Patriotic. It just so happens. I mean, the ways that I became a Rangers fan, it's almost duh, right? Like, I was meant to become a Rangers fan. I digress. I like the all red just because it's a switch up. It's different. They are La Furia Roja. So, I mean, they are really kind of embodying that at that point with the whole all red kit. I mean, I dig it, Juice. I really do. it does kind of harken back a little bit to like the old Nintendo games, when all they could do is switch up, like, you know,
put the same
top color.
Put the same colors on everything and do it that way.
Slightly different shades here or there, but no, not really.
I'm not really digging it, I have to say. The new Germany one, I have to say, I'm a big fan of. I've been sent up some close-up imagery of that. It's very much like the Germany shirt of World Cup 94, but without, obviously, the orange, yellow, black and red kind of bit coming across the chest isn't... It's not that kind of square blocks that it was in back in the day in 94. But I think it's a pretty smart-looking shirt. I'd never buy one. As an Englishman, it's near impossible to get away, unless you're Kit Holden.
Yeah.
I think it's near impossible to get away with buying a Germany shirt and wearing it.
And even Kit's probably only wearing it, you know, when Germany comes to play, maybe, and he's not working it, or he's in Germany.
Yeah, exactly. Although, you know, the guy has such a love for German football, you never know. He may be swayed towards... I wonder who he wants to win, actually. I'll have to give him a tweet later on. I wonder who Kit's pulling for in the England-Germany game come Tuesday. And the Argentina shirt is really nice, really classic-looking shirt. We'll get these
always... Who doesn't want the Argentina shirt, Juice? I'd take an Argentina shirt from any time period.
Really?
Any time.
Yeah, I prefer the kind of Maradona era ones. They're obviously absolutely wonderful. But
Les Coq Sportif.
Yeah. Again, the World Cup 94 one was pretty sweet, and the away one especially, made famous, of course, by Maradona's cocaine eyes towards the camera, which was if anybody sees that, if that came on late at night when you're just sat alone in your living room, pitch black, and that little shot comes on, I guarantee you're feeling like you're in The Omen or something like that at that point, with Maradona's crazy eyes giving you the crazy eyes of Diego from 94. But the new Argentina shirt, I'm a really big fan of, looking smart, crisp. I like the kind of fade in from light to slightly darker shade of blue as you go down the stripes towards the bottom of the shirt, and the plain white arms, no kind of stripes down the arms as well. I think it looks it's a right touch, as some would say. It's a beautiful shirt, though. We will be posting these up as soon as we can on the website and, of course, on the Twitter feed as well. We showed you the Colombia shirt, the Japan shirt, the Mexico shirt earlier on. There's also the Russia shirt, but it's not... I never really get into... I wouldn't ever want to buy a Russian football shirt, I have to say.
I'm with you on that one, Juice. I'm with you on that one.
The one that I want is the Portland Timbers third kit. That's the next shirt I'm gonna get. That's my Christmas list, really. I think the Portland Timbers third kit. If anybody's seen that, it's a wonderful shirt. Just so really smart, beautiful collar on it. Martin Rogers actually had one in his house, and I really wanted to steal it, but decided not to. I think he's probably quite relieved that I didn't. I just love that shirt. Old retro shirts always look fantastic, Raf, and that's why I quite like this Germany one, because it's harking back to the days of growing up watching World Cup 94. One of my first football memories, and a World Cup that, of course, will stand out as still one of the best of all time. I guess we should probably leave it there, Raf, because you probably got to shoot, and I got to get going too. So
unfortunately, man, I'm sorry, but you know, enjoy the weekend of football.
Hey, we've there's very little, unfortunately. I haven't got any work. I haven't got any work this weekend, and I was thinking, oh, I'm gonna have a Saturday. Oh, great, I'll be able to sit down, enjoy, and watch all the football over the weekend. It's like, ah, no, I've only got Friday night for football. Ah, but what a Friday night! France against the Ukraine. That's gonna be a tip-top-tastic tie as well. Oh, really, I quite like that phrase, actually. I'm gonna keep that tip-top-tastic tie indeed. And of course, Portugal against Sweden in the World Cup playoffs. There's, of course, Iceland taking on Croatia and Greece against Romania as well. World Cup friendly matches taking place as well. Of course, there's England against Chile, Scotland against the USA, Italy, Germany. That's going to be a fantastic game tonight. Russia, Serbia could be a very interesting one as well. And give a thought to Canada. They take on the Czech Republic, on your neighbours to the north, Raf. You've got to give them a bit of love as well. But that is all coming your way this evening. We'll be back on Monday to talk about Tuesday's friendlies. But until then, take care. Have an absolutely wunderbar weekend. And we will see you at the same time tomorrow, on Monday even, and ready for England against Germany on Tuesday night. Take care. Have a good one.